But first, let's revisit what happened at the Reserve Bank today, the rates decision. Not the interesting bit of the announcement. It matters because, of course, the Reserve Bank does have the power either to put more money in your pocket or take it out in order to keep inflation steady. Well, inflation is steady, so the bank's next job is to look for monsters under the bed. And the governor, Lesitja Khanyako, said that despite steady improvements in vaccination rates, the stronger confidence that was building up until the riots of last week, better global economic growth, the COVID-19 virus continues to weigh not only on domestic prospects, but on global prospects too, as we see caseloads rising all over the world. Well, locally, he said lockdowns, other measures, like I would assume he meant booze bans, for example, would continue to weigh on economic activity, particularly in sectors dependent on close contact, travel, tourism, hospitality, leisure, anything to do with fun. Most interesting, though, the bank's view that while the recent unrest and economic damage will have a lasting effect on investor confidence and job creation, they're not changing their growth forecast, not at this stage.
There is no doubt that the unrest had disrupted supply chains in South Africa and affected our logistics framework. There is no doubt that it had had an impact on investor confidence, both domestic and international. The country is now on a path to clean the ravages from the unrest, and we just hope that the authorities within whose power it is to quell these events will do as appropriate and make sure that we actually restore normality and by extension hopefully bring back investor confidence. Has it had a rise in the country risk premium? Not at the moment that we have seen so far, but it could have.
It could have, absolutely could have. And what's interesting though, the governor pointing out that growth outlook could have improved. We could have seen even higher than their 4.2% forecast. The private sector had been forecasting higher than the Reserve Bank. For once, it's been quite conservative. Now, says the governor, they're not upgrading their view anytime soon.
Prior to the unrest, we were destined to revise our growth forecast for this year higher. In the aftermath of the unrest, we couldn't revise our growth any higher, but we have decided to keep it the same. We were going to revise our growth higher because the starting point of the forecast was higher as a result of the first quarter GDP figures coming out higher than we had expected, just over 4%, and our expectation was that of 2.7%. And that is the effect that we had had on the GDP. In terms of GDP returning to pre-COVID levels, our baseline is that it is still going to be somewhere in 2023. But as the world is opening up, and if we continue with prudent macro policies and we actually implement some of the structural reforms that government had actually announced, we might see that period for 2023 shift around maybe by a quarter or so being brought forward. But our baseline is still that we will only return to pre-COVID levels.
Professor Adrian Saville joins us now, the investment specialist at Genera Capital. He is a professor also at Gibbs. The Reserve Bank not cutting expectations, but not upping them anytime soon either, Adrian. And it gives you a really clear picture as to the massive disruption that 1 week out of 52 can have on an economy.
Yeah, indeed, Bruce. I think there's a lot of effort that's been put in to try and sort of work out whether it's back of the envelope or deep economic modeling to try and work out just the extent of the damage to the economy. The numbers point to something somewhere between 0.3% and 1% being taken away in terms of GDP. I think the much greater issue, and certainly the governor has referenced this on many occasions, is that the disruptions, events and incidents of the last week really point to the real structural issues that sit resident in the economy. So when we're talking about, growth of 2, 3, or 4%, you can put a plus or a minus in front of that. I think we're really fiddling around the margin. The real issue is how we shift the structure of this economy into an absorptive shape.
And in English, that just means the progress that was being made before these riots, the sale of SAA, the opening up of the ports, the privatization of Eskom. Those are the big things that matter in terms of the future.
Yeah, you know, so in English, as you say, when I use the word inclusive growth, you know, what I mean is it doesn't really matter if the economy grows 1, 2, 3, and 4% and no jobs are created. You know, we sit with 35% unemployment, 65% youth unemployment, massive income inequality, and per capita incomes are the same today that they were when we played in the Football World Cup in 2010. So we have, in every sense, more than a lost decade. And the adjustment, the structural adjustments that we keep hearing about, we're starting to see the needle move on that, and that was the lifting of the self-generation cap that people can now produce up to 100 megawatts, the privatization of SAA. You've mentioned a number of those. And those are just potentially or arguably, those are just the start that get us into a growing economy, a job-creating an environment, and one in which inflation doesn't become a risk as the economy starts to grow.
I mean, you know that I'd like to look for an upside in the down, and we couldn't feel more down right now. And I previously said on the radio that this is Cyril Ramaphosa's crisis to waste. And I think when I said it, I was talking about restructuring his cabinet and reforming his government and getting proper people in proper jobs to do proper work to alleviate some of the burdens. And maybe that's part of it. But the other part of it is the acceleration of reforms, the acceleration of progress.
Yes. And, you know, for a long time, fingers have been pointed at South Africa for a lack of progress on many issues. The release of spectrum is an example. But the effective application of the rule of law is an absolutely critical component. And it's the ironies and the tragedy shouldn't be lost that in the week that, or the days after former President Zuma was incarcerated, which was an important victory for the rule of law, those victories were, you know, to some extent, eroded or pushed back. So structural adjustment is about, you know, clear economic needles that need to move, such as the release of spectrum, but also moving the needle on, you know, what I would call invisibles or intangibles, such as the rule of law. So it's broad-based structural adjustment that we need to get in place.
When you look at the recovery path that South Africa is on, despite the own goals that we are prone to score against ourselves, I mean, is it still intact? I mean, following last week, I know everybody's in a deep funk, and we were talking to Brett Dawson, who's big into private equity now, and saying, yes, we'll support businesses in which we're invested, but we're not adding new capital to new businesses. Jaco Marie, investment envoy to the president, saying, you know, don't expect any foreign direct investment for a while, at least until foreigners can see how we respond as a country. I mean, all of this stuff is a very real threat. Everybody's kind of waiting for the signals that we've been talking about.
Yeah, and you know, I think that sort of that stands to reason that where your confidence is frayed, you've got little evidence. You've got lots of evidence of talk and little evidence of action. I think there's every good reason to be cautious and hesitant, and that's exactly what we're seeing on the part of the private sector. There are other risks that I think are introduced into this conversation. So there's talk now about the basic income grant, which has been kicked around for a very long time. That in many ways is absolutely critical given the extent and the nature of poverty, inequality in the country. But, you know, does it come at the cost, at the price of investment in infrastructure? And if it does, we might be giving with one hand and taking away with the other. And this is the, you know, this is the way in which reforms need to be wholesale. And The fact that you're speaking to private investors or private sector investors who are saying they're cautious, they're hesitant, I think that that's one of the freest lunches available, is to get collaboration going on between the public and private sector, because there is no example of a country that has built a prosperous society with just the private sector or just the public sector. It is always a partnership.
Couldn't say it better. Thank you, Professor Adrian Saville. That's why we got him on, because he says it better. Investment specialist at Genera Capital and professor at Gibbs.